Hi, Art. This is Martin Theopoulos. I really appreciate your contacting us.
Okay. I have another man with me here.
Okay.
It's Chris Myers.
Do you mind if I record some of the conversation just so we can hang on to some of it?
Not really, but I think this was a conversation to determine whether future conversations would be worth taping.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Anyhow, Chris Myers is sitting right here. His great-grandfather was a close associate with the Faircute Company for a long, long time, as well as Irvin Smith. And Chris is now, he's a neighbor and a friend. He's an electrical engineer, and he's followed the story.
Oh, cool. Okay.
More closely than anyone else that I know right now.
Great. Okay.
I'm thinking of saying a few things to outline the scope of what's been going on here for a long, long time.
That'd be great.
I may not completely follow in order, chronology. I skip around. But it's taken a long time.
Right.
And a huge amount of material has been gathered, placed, and so forth. And no one so far has had the inclination to have me lay out the sequence of events that have taken my friend Jay Gandy, who's deceased now, and me for decades to accumulate this incredible story, which it's time for someone else to carry it along.
Right.
We hope over the years and thought we had accumulated enough material or sources of other material that would justify a biography of Irvin Smith. The world he traveled in, you know, in the 1890s was amongst his peers were the most high profile people in engineering, manufacturing, professional organizations, education of the engineer. He really knew these people, particularly in the East, as well as in Europe, you know, he did some fabulous things. He frequently made trips to Europe and was associated with the European engineers and the movements and all this has been accumulated, but no one has been fit to really try to understand the whole story. So if the story of what we accomplished in terms of gathering the information were put together, that in itself could conceivably be an important document.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
Starting from scratch, if we had not done what we did, it would most likely all have been lost.
Right.
In fact, after all these years and all the scattered accumulations of Smith material and what we did to identify the most important parts of his career and the contributions of his company to manufacturing and even to the war effort in Europe and World War II.
Right.
So Jay won, and that leaves me in a town where Chris is sitting here, and Chris and I are probably the only ones in 25,000 people that are interested in this to this degree.
Right.
The only ones. I don't know of another person that would sit here, as you're in Texas and we're here, that would be interested in hearing this, and as what I have to say unfolds, you're going to realize it is an absolutely complex and huge story. And among other things, he was one of the most, if not the most, prolific writers in technology, of manufacturing, inventing, and he published or had written hundreds of articles that appeared in dozens of journals, plus both here and in Europe. Just reams of stuff. And until we started in 1960 with Jay, the company, the plant site had been sold. Before that, the business had been sold to a firm in St. Louis, Missouri, who continues to do business under the Faircute name. Probably not designing Faircute metalworking presses, but most likely continuing with repairs.
Right.
So that company has gone through various hands, and I don't know. But in 1968, when they bought the company, they took from here all the drawings, essential records, essential patterns to continue manufacturing there. So what was left behind was the factory site, the pattern storage containing thousands of patterns, the real estate. Well, Jay began in the late 60s, the first person who bought the property from the owner, which was George Bass, for 31 years. And they undertake a village or flea market, an artisan thing that never materialized. But for a short time, they had a flea market, and Jay was dealing in and collecting phonographs. And they had cleaned out the office and the safe with huge amounts of stuff going to the landfill at the time or to St. Louis. But strangely enough, a few things remained apparently in a back part of the safe. And that book of information papers mentioned over in this auto phone, apparently the first device with a remote control automatic record changer, which has been described almost 100% certain that it was really the first prototype of the jukebox.
Right.
That came into the hands of a collector many, many years ago down in southern, further south in New Jersey, in a monumental collection of cars and fire engines and things. And the cumbersome first prototype or first version of the autophono was sold at that auction, and we found out later that it was purchased and shipped to Germany. The second version was built in the 1920s, and that burned in Smith's home.
Wow.
So that's just one of the many parts of the story that are interesting. But Jay found those, the owners of the property had found these documents and gave him copies. So that started him on the way of the autophono. He published early articles, Phonographed Monthly. It was a little newspaper, little paper published by a man named Konigsberg.
Huh.
And just went on year after year, month after month, accumulating all this. In 1976, I had a neighbor who had long time been an important employee in the manufacturing part of Faircute, and the neighbors for a long time. I used to go across the street and listen to them talk, and it just, the more they said, the more fascinated it became. And the property was empty. The owner was in Philadelphia. And this is all told in the introduction to my book. Nevertheless, it was published because the former owner's son saw fit to encourage me to do that. And it was to be a present for his father, George Bass.
Huh.
Yeah. So Jay and I worked along with parts of this story and decided that searching out or locating the details of Smith's work on magnetic recording was his favorite. And he worked on it to the extent of accumulating a huge quantity of paperwork.
Wow.
Absolutely huge. And went far and wide for it. And I chose a favorite portion of the part of the story, which was chapter 5 of my book, Faircute Goes to China. That turned out to be a very important part. We assembled an extensive exhibit here in town, and I had to find out what happens to these sooner or later. And we found out that there were Chinese coin collectors, and the sample were the pattern coins for the Chinese government, and made on machinery that Smith built and shipped in the 1890s to the remote province of China. If you read chapter 5, that story was elaborated or expanded to create an exhibit, and it's since been dispersed by a numismatic coin dealer in New York. The material was all archived and put together. It was shipped to China, and last April was sold at a numismatic auction in Hong Kong. And it was successful. We sent archival material. We sent original photographs of the interior of the mint. We sent photographs of the machinery being built here. So that's another part of the story.
Right.
Other part of the story include the fact that Smith was an early member of engineering and manufacturers and inventors. He was he helped invent the discipline of professional engineering, ASME, and the others. In his list of associates include some of the most important people in all this story. Westinghouse, Tesla, Steinmetz, it just goes on, Edison, and it keeps on and on.
Right, great.
The time we started to work on this, and Jay as well, we knew that he had made this effort in magnetic recording, but we did not know how important it was until Engel became involved in Germany. And at one point, the material I had, much of it was sent to Hagley and so on. I received a little note from a man in New York who was an importer of high-grade audio equipment. The man was named Steve Temmer. It turns out he was a correspondent to Engel. In fact, this morning I was on YouTube, and maybe you know about a video on YouTube that is conducted on the by Engel. You know about that?
No, I don't.
Yeah, it's there now. There's an extensive one about manufacturing RCA building records in Camden, New Jersey, and so on. So there's more information than I realized. It seems to proliferate every few weeks or something else related to some aspect of the story, another website. Mm. Around the world, I think there are many, 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 many websites that mention to some degree Smith's involvement with this magnetic recording story. So when Engel, I got the note from Temmer in New York, who was a correspondent for Engel in Germany, and finally Engel came here to South Jersey, Temmer came down here, and Jay got involved. Jay proceeded to gather information about Smith's involvement with the magnetic recording story. When we published my book, we weren't aware that it was that important. It took Engel and others to determine, as you're well aware, that when the 1888 Electrical World article was published, and it was published because Smith gave it away. I have other things to do. Here it is. You run with it.
No.
It should make exactly what Paulson did. But the key, which they found out in the late 80s by Engel, apparently, was the fact that the original drawing and the description, the article that Smith delivered to the Electrical World, the drawing was not correct. If it was standing that way, there were too many loops of wire around the helix and would not have worked. The Reader's Letter, if you've read this, it's in the Engel paper if you don't have read that, that the Reader's Letter they found later was Smith saw the article and said, oh my, you made a mistake. That's not the way it's supposed to be. And he wrote to the Electrical World and corrected, you only have one or at the most two windings around the helix, otherwise it would not work at all. If that were the case, then it was Engel who delivered in the 80s the most. It was Engel's job to lay out this story. In a lecture he delivered at a gathering of the Audio Engineers Society in California, and published in that issue of the Audio Engineers Journal. And then later, the same thing shortly after, it was published in form illustrated in color, very fine article, in an audio magazine, the newsstand version of Audio Magazine. And I have it right here, and that was Audio December 1988.
Okay,
the front cover is 100th anniversary of magnetic recording. That was the point where it really was explained, and it was a celebration held here in Bridgeton, great fanfare. There was a medal presented to a group here by having Smith become a member of the New Jersey Inventors Hall of Fame. A ceremony was held at the Philosophic Society off anybody but wasn't able to go.
Oh.
So, sometime before Jay died, he had several problems that caused him to realize he could not go on with the project. He turned his collection of material, much of it having to do with his search for the story of Smith and magnetic recording, over to Rowan University. It was just north of where we live. It was originally the state teacher's school, Glassboro State College. Before he turned it over, I told him that it was my feeling it was not the best judgment on his part to do that. But he reminded me that it was his judgment, and he would do just that. So he gave them this huge amount of material. A filing cabinet, I don't know how many material, much of it, was simply the business of Smith and tape and magnetic recording, to include such things as, they identified the fact that they're pretty sure now that Paulson discovered Smith's 1888 article and improved on it, made it work. So it wasn't as though Paulson stole the thing, but it irked Smith terribly that Paulson couldn't at least say, well, you know, thanks. I mean, I used your article and here's where I am.
Right.
To do that.
Right.
So Smith pursued further when Paulson applied for an American patent. Smith had already been very much involved with the patent office for a long, long time. He wrote a paper on patent office reform, as he wrote papers on endless things. And so he undertook to intercept Paulson's patent. And Jay, my friend, had some contacts, and he had the right person tell him the right phone number to call, and he got to the right person in the archives, library, not library, National Archives, and the man went right to the interception, patent interception folder that involved, that showed Smith attempting to block Smith's Paulson's patent.
Wow.
Well, it didn't happen. So Paulson went into production, another company went in, the person who bought his patent, the company, went into production of the telegraph phone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Smith wasn't satisfied with that, and so there's a letter or two here showing that he wrote to those people saying he still would like to have a part of the pie.
Right.
If it's something he could manufacture and it's something he wanted still to have a part in it. But what he did not understand was that the people who produced telegraph phones were more interested in selling stock in their company than selling their machines. In the meantime, after I published the book, I turned a huge quantity of material over to the Hagley Library in Greenfield, Delaware. It's the largest repository for industrial history, records, photographs, etc. in North America.
Wow.
One of the DuPont locations.
Okay.
It's on the grounds of the original DuPont, E.I. DuPont Powder Works along the Brandywine Creek. It turned it into a multi-acre museum, and one is the Library of Industrial History. Much of what I had went there. Jay's material, including this vast collection of correspondence about magnetic recording, went to Ron, which was not advisable. And it's proven that I probably was to a great degree of correct in that judgment. I went up there after he sent the things to Ron. I went with him one day and met the archivist. And the interviewer, the visit proved to me that I was right in the first place. I didn't see any prospects of anything really important coming from that donation. And I agreed. I offered to help the woman sort the material out because it would take forever. I had a undergraduate student offering with a stipend to archive that material. They would be forever making any sense whatsoever out of it because it was such a huge quantity. It was stacks of reams. And then, so Jay did help Engel and kept in touch with Engel until several years ago. Now, that's part of it. I still have a collection of material here that is representative of various aspects of what he did. A pioneer in the technology and the building of metalworking presses for industry. You know, customers in the automotive industry, and particularly Ford and other industries. He was
very active in the American Society of Mechanical Engineers. He wrote numerous articles. He went to Paris in 1900 to exhibit the Paris International. He had been in Paris in 1889, the dedication of the Eiffel Tower, had lunch with the Eiffel, the top of the tower. He just went on and on for years and years and years, having this incredible communication with these people. When he went to ASME meetings, whether it be Niagara Falls, Westinghouse installation of the Tesla generator, all these things he was a part of, discussing the rise of the patent office and reform and how they conducted their business. He wrote so many articles on manufacturing that he could well have accumulate many of those things would be a textbook in mechanical engineering of building machines. So with what's here, when Jay set those things to run, it was way beyond what he had accumulated relative to magnetic recording.
Right.
Did help Ron had become and had a consequential undergraduate and graduate program in engineering that he fantasized, I guess, that the archives department and the academic department of engineering would somehow think that that would be worthwhile to cooperate and publish a biography of Smith.
Right.
He didn't do it. Say a few words to Chris while I take a break here.
Okay.
It was my great-grandfather and his twin brother who were chief engineer and plant superintendent of Faircute for a long, long time. And they were, I'm not exactly sure of their employee date. The plant burned in the late 1880s, or late 1890s, rather. And they were there before that. I think they started around when they were, in their late teens or early 20s.
Right.
Working for Evelyn Smith. And we're there for up at least through the 40s and 50s. Art's back here, so we'll continue here.
Okay, I appreciate your doing this. What is your background again, Art?
My background is fine art. 35 years. Did my graduate work at Indiana University in Bloomington. I majored in art history and ceramics, and had a mini pottery production business here.
Wow.
And then to teach, retired from teaching, and since then I've been in the local history business with a nonprofit venue of exhibits, including photographs and complex arrangements and study of local history in this town, of which there are not many of us. It's been set up in a large plumbing, custom kitchen, bathroom showroom.
Wow.
With the owner of friends of mine, have been invited a few of us take advantage of a large portion of their showroom, and we have 6 days a week open to the public exhibits of local history. When Engel was working on his paper and having Temer assist, Temer went to Copenhagen and had a discussion with an audio engineer at Danish Broadcasting.
Oh, right.
And here, the engineer prepared a tape of remarks that he made from what he had read and sent the tape to New York. Finally, the engineer said, well, they figured that it was sure that Paulson had used Smith's writing in Electrical World because Paulson was known to have done that, reading lots of journals.
Right.
The engineer, there were other instances where ideas of things he manufactured were not his, but elaborated on things that somebody else did.
Right.
The final remark by the engineer on this tape is that Paulson was known to have stolen others' ideas, and it seems to him that he'd stolen Smith's idea. Of course, he didn't steal it because Smith gave it away. Engel was pretty well satisfied that the first to conceive the idea of magnetic recording was Smith, but shortly after he came back from visiting Edison, his intent was to find a way to improve on Edison's phonograph. And so Smith's first idea was not a magnetic solution, but an acoustical one. And the first drawing and it's in the Engel paper, showing a tape, a wire going through a little lamp, like an alcohol lamp, and heating the wire, and then having the voice or the sound making dentations in the wire. And then he went from the acoustical, finally, of course, to the magnetic. When Jay discovered, you know, Smith didn't have a patent, Smith realized he needed to protect what he did, and so he filed a rather detailed description of his idea of magnetic recording. He'd done this with other things in a sealed envelope and filed it as a memorandum with a county clerk. He did that with other things, and those documents are still in the county clerk's office. Engel had access to all that material when it was discovered. It was in the front page of the newspaper. Their newspaper articles about this story have been dozens and dozens and dozens. But at this point, there seems to be, locally, how much real serious interest, Chris?
Practically none.
This is a long story, and, you know, things will say personal effects belong to Smith, the drawings or things that belong, are very scarce and sparse. I don't know what's left of St. Louis, maybe nothing, but it's been so scattered. And I turned over hundreds and hundreds of photographs to Hagley, but still have retained those and the type and quality that would be useful in a biography. And I hope we have done a fairly good job of a summary of the scope and the magnitude of the story.
Thank you, Art, again for contacting me. And again, Chris, thank you for participating. And I'll get back to you and see where we go.
Okay. Thanks. Been a pleasure talking to you.
Y'all too. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.